I'm so thrilled that you could join us today, and I'll introduce our panel, and then we'll dive into some questions. And please, as we're going along, just jot down questions you might like to ask members of the panel. We'll have some Q&A time, and also when we break up into small groups, you may get to ask some of those as well. So. I'm Mae Nicholson. I have a PhD in English literature, everybody's obvious pathway into faith and science, of course. But I studied a lot of history of science, and I studied the era when science, as we know it, was kind of emerging in the early modern period, in the 1500s. And that is one way I got interested in these questions and supporting people through it. And then I was on staff with the university's national grad and faculty team for about 8.5 years. Really enjoyed that, and I've recently transitioned to working as director of partnerships and innovation with ASA and collaborating closely with InterVarsity, which I'm really enjoying also. I'm also on staff at Chesterton House, which is a Christian Studies Center at Cornell. So I really enjoy the different local and national context for this. And I'm excited to introduce our panel. So we have Dwight Schwartz, who has 20 years of experience supporting people in faith and science conversations, and someone who knows him is applying the amazing work he's been doing from the back, which is great. Dwight also has a PhD in physical chemistry, and has used that PhD to help think through these questions at a very deep level, and he has a lot of good career advice as well. And he will be receiving the 3rd annual ASA Campus Ministry Award at State of the ASA. So, really excited to have that. Next is Veronica Friends. Veronica is near finishing her PhD at Michigan State University in ecology, and is in the postdoc search right now, so she may have tips on transitional moments. She's also done an amazing job of science communication and has been interviewed in Smithsonian about her work and other really wonderful public engagement venues that get a lot of people thinking about ecology in a popular audience. And so we're thrilled to have her. Then we have Matthew Ravishandran, who has just finished his degree at Gordon, where he helped to lead the student chapter of the ASA. So someone has been thinking for quite a while about faith and science questions very deeply, and is now transitioning to exploring that through work in a secular lab setting in Boston. So we're very happy to welcome him. And then Louise Wong, who is a dean and professor at Azusa Pacific University, and in addition to being a fantastic teacher and mentor, she also organizes all these really cool events for Gordon. So she did one on bioethics recently, and then she has just finished one on artificial intelligence. I'm sorry, not for Gordon, for Azusa Pacific. This is the allergy mix that I have. I don't know where you teach them. I heard fantastic things from Google research professionals who were in that event. So, and last but not least, we have Matt Sewell, who has helped to lead the Silicon Valley chapter of ASA and has pursued his PhD and is now doing his postdoc at University of Virginia, but is physically located in Chicago much of the time, working at Fermi Lab there. So our goal here was to help you meet some of the awesome early career and mentoring types in the ASA, and also kind of represent a range of field areas and different parts of the early career stage, since for us early career is a pretty broad range. It includes being an undergraduate student, a graduate student, a postdoc, or in an early age professional role after school. So delighted to have you again. I thought we would begin by asking Veronica and Matt, who've been thinking about this for quite a while, to think of a time or an issue where it felt hard to you to integrate your life as a Christian and your life as a scientist, whether that was intellectually or just practically or in some way. We use that as kind of a springboard to think about connections between spiritual formation and career formation. And then after we hear from you two, we'll ask Dwight to give us a little bit of an intro to what do we actually mean by spiritual formation. So Veronica, we'll start with you and then hand the mic to that, if that's all right.
Yeah. Hi there. It's lovely to see you guys. Yeah, so just kind of thinking around my own, like reflecting on my own growth. So just a little bit of a background. So I'm in the sixth year of my PhD, but I also have like, let's see, from college, I graduated in 2007. So I have many years of exploration when it comes to science and faith, but they have three main stages. And the first one was when I was in college. It was when I entered college that I was really sensing that there is this conflict between science and faith. That's what I was hearing from my church. And so when I was in college, my goal was to try to find out how can I be a scientist and a Christian at the same time. And so like that was like my big step of integration, was saying, okay, it's okay to have both. It's okay. I can be a scientist. Like I was learning materials in a different way than what I was hearing in high school, hearing in the church. Like in becoming a scientist, I was kind of within myself affirming that I can still believe in God and be a scientist. But after that, I started my career, and I worked on commercial fishing boats as a field tech, if you want to call it that. And I was just out in the creation. I've been in many different places. And I really started to feel that, okay, I can be a Christian. So I do my devotionals in the morning, do my devotionals at night, have a rhythm, a Christian rhythm. But I still, you know, did my job as a scientist. And so that was me living as a Christian and as a scientist. But then there's still, like, then I'm called to this higher thing, right? And I think everyone's called to that. But it was for me when I was entering my PhD that I started to really feel that my, like, being a scientist was part of my identity. And being a Christian was also my identity, becoming more and more my identity. And I was finding a conflict within myself that I myself was separating it, not because of the science, not because of anything else, then I wasn't bringing God with me in relationship in what I was doing. And so the full integration of science and faith for me has been within myself, realizing that God, I study ecology, and ecology is the study of relationship, and God himself wanted to be in relationship with me as I was learning about relationships around the world. And so my science and faith integration right now has been like kind of imagining God giving me a high five when I finished a chapter of my PhD, or like talking to him while I'm working. And really like that's like that stage that I'm in where like I realize like God is a loving God who wants to be in all aspects of my life, everything. So I think that was my journey. So and it may happen in different times, different stages. But
all right. So I think for me, the time when, you know, there appeared to be conflicts was growing up in the church and the Christian school that I grew up in. So I grew up near Detroit area. Fun fact, it's the only place in the continental U.S. you drive south to go to Canada, actually, based on how geography works there. So it was a pretty like stereotypical conservative Christian community there that I grew up in. And the young earth belief was present in that community, and also in my family as well. To give an example, I think today my high school still takes an annual field trip down to the young earth creation museum and the Ark Encounters in, I guess, Kentucky. I grew up in all that stuff. So when I entered the field of physics, there was obviously a clear conflict because there's no way to put those two views together, in my opinion. So I basically kind of lived in that conflict as an undergrad. And it wasn't until grad school when I moved out to California, and I asked my pastor at the time, is it possible to combine both science and faith? And basically, it was kind of a conservative church, or at least California conservative, so relatively speaking. And to my surprise, he basically said yes. And then he kind of asked me a question that was surprising. He basically said, what do people in your field who are Christians, what do they have the same issue? And I thought about it, and I was like, I don't actually really know, because I didn't know anyone in my field or really any reputable scientist who was Christian. I kind of just assumed they were all some form of creationists. And so I stumbled upon, I don't remember the details how, I stumbled upon Francis Collins' book, based on that question, that challenge to find out what people who are reputable scientists say on the issue. And there's actually kind of like a footnote in the book referencing the ASA. That's actually how I first heard of the ASA. And then I got involved and saw a bunch of successful scientists who are also professing Christians. And that's sort of how that kind of led me to make those two seemingly opposite beliefs compatible. So, yeah. So, I'm very grateful for the ASA in general.
Thank you both so much for sharing some of your stories and your individual journeys on this. And if you want to pass the mic back towards Dwight, Dwight's going to talk a little bit for us about what it means to connect all the parts of your life, right? To have spiritual formation, to have professional formation, and kind of spiritual formation as a bedrock, but also as someone trained in science and supporting scientists, how that can connect.
Well, good morning. I think we should define our terms. Okay. So the slippery one here is the word formation. And I'd like to suggest to you that there are a number of ways you could go about this, but it seems to me that a person who's fully formed spiritually and fully formed professionally, the one thing they have in common is they know the source of the knowledge that they draw on, right? And of course, you know, I hope in terms of identity, I mean, we hear a lot about identity today. I hope your identity is as a person who has been purchased by the blood of Christ before it's anything else. There might be a whole lot of legitimate things to say about who you are in distinction from other people. And then there are, of course, some spurious things. But who really are you? Okay. And then if we talk about formation, the underlying issue is that when you understand that the source of your knowledge is in a couple of categories, but one of the key ones is authority. Most of what you know is known because you trust another person who claims to know it. Okay. Now, if we're talking about the Christian faith, what are we actually talking about? We're talking about Jesus as the incarnate Son of God, who, as the writer to Hebrews says, was there as the agent of creation at the very beginning. Whatever, and you know, parsing creation is a whole other topic. If we answer questions of who, what, when, where, why, and how, the who and the why question of creation is the question. Everything else is, in my mind, details. Now, I have scientific colleagues who want to pound the table about what and where and when, and that's, you know, I appreciate their concern. But the Bible's question, for all other questions, is who and why. So spiritual formation becomes then knowing the source of the knowledge that we claim to have. And the source is indeed a person. It's Jesus. And it's Jesus from front to the middle to the back. Okay. The Apostle Paul said it this way, and I'm just going to clumsily refer to my notes here. You know, behind all this stuff is what are we trying to accomplish, right? What's the purpose of professional formation, of spiritual formation? The Apostle Paul would say something like, to know Christ and make him known, you know, he says the following in Ephesians 4:20, a little bit of editorializing about the moral infractions of the pagan way of life. And he says, you did not come to know Christ by those means. Ultimately, he says, you were made to be new in the attitude of your minds. You were made to put on the new self. And the new self, Paul says, is created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. And the one and only one picture of true righteousness and holiness that any one of us has access to is the person of Jesus. Okay, not just Jesus, but the Lord Jesus, the Christ. The fleshly embodiment of the eternal God. Right. So now the question is, you know, what's the why of all this? Well, the why is to glorify God. And we do that by being like Jesus, being the living picture of who Christ was in our own imperfect way. But the broad, long-term average of your life is that when people think about you, they can't avoid thinking about Christ. And then all the disciplines wind up being expressions of the astounding wisdom present at the beginning of creation. Embodied, I want to say, using that word loosely, embodied in all the different manifestations of creation. And whether you're in basket weaving or French literature or nuclear physics, you are playing with the very ideas that are a part of the makeup of God, because he spoke it all into existence. So now the question is, what is the why behind your life? The why for a person who identifies mainly as a Christian is to be like Christ, who is the image of the invisible God. And how do you do that? Well, we all know the famous things like prayer and Bible study and community and stuff like that. The one many of us in science who are maybe a little bit on the introverted side of things, the one we miss is to tell others about him. Yeah. And my suggestion is that you will know and understand more of this once you start talking about it with others. So that's the very short summary. Spiritual formation is about being like Christ. It's of the essence of a person whose identity is fundamentally that of a person purchased by the shed blood of Christ on the cross. And all the rest will figure itself out. I love the comments this morning about wisdom. Wisdom is this vital thing which now we understand, well, it's a person. Jesus is the very wisdom of God in human flesh. And if you read through the Gospels, you'll see time and again where Jesus exhibited God's wisdom, which is to say, Jesus understood the right analogical connections between everyday, ordinary things and the deepest spiritual things, and understood what to do about that. So I better stop. I could talk for a while on this, and you can grab me afterwards and say, you know, what did you mean by that, or whatever. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Dwight, for that very eloquent description of spiritual formation and wisdom and how we see Christ in what we do, even if that takes a lifetime to figure out. So I want to turn next to Matthew Rivchandran, who's been thinking about these things and cultivating ways to talk about them in community throughout his undergraduate education, and has recently transitioned to life in the professional world and a new context for thinking about them. And I'd love to hear a little bit from you about how the training and thinking and talking about these things is informing your life in the professional world.
Yeah, so in undergrad, I had the opportunity to be a part of the ASA student chapter at Gordon College.
So maybe just double check that everyone can hear you before we...
Okay, so in undergrad, I had the opportunity to be part of the ASA student chapter at Gordon College. And I think for me, that was a good opportunity to begin the process of thinking about how I integrate science and faith. And I think for me, it's still an ongoing process. I think there's I'm learning more and more about how my faith influences my career, which is I want to do biomedical research. And I think a big part of that is to heal other people. And that's a very important part of our faith, and that's to heal. So and I think that I'm still working through, how exactly I can integrate it. But I know that what's most important is that, to glorify God. And to glorify God is to use the skills you have, or He's given you in your career. So,
thank you so much. And I love that you're willing to say, I'm still thinking about this, but here's the theme I'm pursuing, which I think is so crucial to these conversations about connecting the different parts of your life. Louise, we'd love to hear your perspective as a dean and a professor who's mentored a lot of people in these questions on, what's been helpful in sustaining those connections and flourishing in them over time for your students and for you?
Yes, thank you, and good morning, everyone. I want to highlight something Matthew said very importantly, how our faith influences our discipline of science. So in the Susan Pacific University, we really focus on something called faith integration. It's an academic endeavor. So the late Ian Barbard, a British physicist, who also is a established scholar in science and faith, he has this model to relate science and religion, the four models. First one is warfare, which is quite straightforward, as you have heard and experienced through years, centuries of debate and arguments. So you can think of science and faith as antagonistic of each other. Whether one is pushing against one another, the other, or the other one on top pushing against over the other one. The second one is separation. So science is a circle, faith is a circle. They don't touch each other. So you might have heard of Stephen Jay Gould, the non-overlapping magisteria, in which they just exist or coexist. They don't have to interact as long as they stay in the circle, we're fine. The third one is dialogue. Something less than what we're doing. We're talking to another friend or a person on a bench, but there's no really a pathetic response that we don't have to internalize. We don't have to understand or agree. We're just talking with each other. So there's one step further than the two non-overlapping circles, right? And the fourth one is faith integration, which I really value at a university in which we do that from first year all the way up to graduate studies. And some programs have scaffolded approaches in which we have developed a plan. And we have two actually students who are at APU right now in the midst, and they are actually in the Department of Biology and Chemistry, in which they have developed scaffolded what we call FI, faith integration, and every class, every program, we are required to do so. What I mean by that, it is not just starting with prayer, which I know Diana and Hannah experienced that as well, not just a devotional, such as something you will hear at Sunday school, but like what Matthew mentioned, how does my faith influence my science, and how does my science influence my faith? Imagine some of you are wearing glasses. I'm actually myopic, I'm short-sighted. So without my glasses, I'm wearing contacts right now. I cannot see. So every day I have to put on my glasses so that I can see sharply. So when we can put on lenses to see the things in front of us with our faith lens, that will add a dimension and depth in what we do, isn't it? And I'm a chemist in training by training. So I will see things through chemistry. In fact, if you had coffee, if you didn't like it black, you take chemistry because you add a solvent. In us, as long as your solvents, right? Your creamer and your sugar. So I see everything through the lens of chemistry. And I think I'm biased that chemistry is really fun. And instead of 95% of my students will come in and tell me how they hate chemistry, how they dread my class, so on and so forth. So I think it's a really unique opportunity. And I really I'm grateful, appreciate how Joanna and the plenary said this morning, sees every opportunity, just in the Bible, sees every opportunity to embody Christ, to radiate His light, His teaching, right? So it can be, it doesn't have to be overt. In some of your institution, you can't be overt because you would be in a disadvantaged position if you do so. But you can do so in a way that brings out Christ's teaching and the values. So about 5 years ago, CRISPR was on every front page of Science magazine or not. And we took the opportunity to host it. We didn't call it CRISPR symposium, but it was on gene editing. We brought in scientists from Harvard and theologians from Stanford. And we just really had a very rigorous and robust discussion and learning about it, because we don't want to shy away from these topics. I think that's one I see as a drawback. And also something that the church came out, you heard Joanna this morning, she kind of just encouraged her pastor from preaching about AI, right, from the pulpit. But in academics, we can incorporate and integrate our faith smoothly and seamlessly. And I think that is something that I really appreciate being in a Christian institution. I don't have to compartmentalize my faith. I don't have to, when I go into the lab, I don't have to leave my faith hat on the coat hanger, which I did in graduate school. I went to a secular graduate school.
Yes.
Right? So, and that is something that I don't have to be a double agent. My daughter said that in her college application. She didn't have to be a double agent anymore as she was in public high school. So if you have the opportunity to integrate your faith, do it, because it is a very unique opportunity and platform. And I hope that you will see the fruit that you bear as you go along.
Thank you so much, Louise. It's a wonderful overview and encouragement. So we want to turn to the Matthews and Veronica. We have a lot of awesome Matthews in the ASL network. Though I do assure you, I do put people on panels who are not named Matthew often. We just love to hear kind of your application of the ideas about integration that Louise is talking about. And we'd love to have you share just one way that you see your work in your science field and your faith connecting, and that could be very philosophical, or it could be, I learned how to love my neighbor by cleaning the lab equipment. I've heard both, and they're both great answers, or it could be something else I haven't thought of. So I think we'll start at the end with Matt Soul, and then go down the line.
All right, so I think I'll answer that question very specifically. Specifically about what I do in my research. So my main interest and expertise actually has to do with dark matter, which is sort of this mysterious type of matter that makes up 85% of the total mass in the universe, but we have no idea what it is. My research is trying to figure out what it is and also where it came from. It turns out dark matter is very intimately connected to the creation process. It was around, in the Big Bang, and it continues to stay around today. And the extra mass that dark matter provides actually causes galaxies to clump together, which is integral to, the formation of stars and eventually us. So, the creation process and dark matter are inseparable. And my research is more focused on dark matter and accelerators. So we effectively reproduce the collisions in the very early universe between dark matter and our familiar matter, about a nanosecond to a second after the Big Bang. And for me, it's just very cool to be a part of that creation process, in a sense, even if it's somewhat artificial and somewhat later. We know that we're made in the image of God. And God is our creator. And I think it's quite interesting that not only are we able to go back and explain the creation process, we are actually able to reproduce it in some sense, at least in my field, and to be able to do that at a lab, essentially. So I think, in that sense, for me, doing my research, trying to create dark matter at a lab, although unsuccessfully at this point, is sort of an act of worship in that sense. That's more or less a specific example of how I relate my work to it.
Wonderful.
For me, I work at a lab which focuses on mitochondrial biology, specifically how its role in various diseases such as cancers, metabolic diseases. So how I integrate my faith in my work is that, these diseases causes suffering, And I feel like as Christians, we're called to help, you know, those who are suffering. And so I can help that by assisting in very necessary research to come up with novel therapeutics to help treat these diseases.
So for me, I think like a lot of what I do is mostly with the ideas that I form. So I'm as I said before, I'm an ecologist, but I also do things for conservation, and I also work with theoretical ecologists. So like even just the foundations of what ecology is. And an ecology is the study of like how species interact with each other, interact with their own species, other species, and the environment. And at least in the past like 5-6 years of my research, I've been more reflecting on God's character. Because again, like ecology being a study of relationships, and if we look at how like as we look at the creation, you know, we look at the story of Job, and he's like, "Why, God? Why?" And he says, "Well, look at the creation. Like, look at the wise men. Look at all these other kind of things." And so, if God keeps telling us to look at the creation, that means that we can learn about Him. And so, with my research, I think about God's character, and I say, "Well, does that actually fit?" And that helps me to ask new questions. So. You know, like in ecology, a lot of things are driven by competition. And at least in the human world, I think, okay, competition kind of sounds like, does that really sound godly? Is it okay to be competition and antagonistic? Like, is that truly a driving force, or is this just a result of the math that we did? Or my PhD research itself is on how humans affect species and how they're distributed around the world, and also describing the niche, which is like where species fit in their environment. And just doing a Bible study the first summer of my PhD, just, you know, kind of rereading Genesis, I noticed that in the creation story, you know, like as God was creating, each day, no matter how you interpret it, each day of creation, God called it very good. He called it good. But when humans were in the picture, that's when He said it was very good. And that's when God rested. And as an ecologist, I'm like, wow, as we keep looking at humans, we think of humans as impacts. We think of human-wildlife conflict. When we talk about sustainability, we see a conflict between biodiversity and human flourishing. But there's a very good that's part of God's intention. So as an ecologist, I say, is a very good equilibrium? What is very good? Is it maximum sustainable yield? And that's what drives my research, is just knowing God and looking at scripture in other ways that as I reflect on what I do, and it really inspires my discovery, where even if my research is a mess, I just don't let go of my ideas because I'm longing to see what God's been speaking about for like millennia.
Thank you so much for those really compelling descriptions of your own work and how they connect with your faith. We'll turn now to Louise and Dwight. And, you know, in addition to PhDs in science fields and your own research, and for Louise, you both support a lot of students and early career professionals. What's some of the best career advice you found in that process? Because people, of course, also have just practical questions about how to flourish in their career. So great, we'll start with you, then move to Louise.
My goodness, that's a hard question. And I want to start by saying, first of all, last night we heard genetics is not destiny, and your professional genetics is not destiny either.
I have a quick question. Can everybody hear all right?
The fact that you have a, you know, let's say a PhD in something doesn't mean that there is a lot of good you can do in a field that would be surprising to other people. So I'm the poster child for getting a PhD in chemical physics, studying magnetic resonance spectroscopy, and then winding up as the conversation partner of students and professors across the spectrum of disciplines, teasing out the implications of the Christian faith for life in all of its facets, let's say. So, in other words, midwifery in the area of formation, right? So first of all, your degree is not your destiny. I want to just give lip service at the moment to the notion of calling in some large sense. Your studies reflect a sense of calling at some point, but God can call all of us, and sometimes He does. I think it's vital that the community around you affirms the current direction and new directions. And deep down inside, you know, there's still the question of why. So I want to keep saying that. We heard the word worship over here. It's maybe the most important word in all of English language. You ascribe worth to something, you determine what the worth is, and then you act in accordance with that worship. Part of the sweet spot of career is doing things that where you find instinctually you're making good decisions over time and you enjoy doing that. That's pretty theoretical. You're going to have to work that out and practice for yourself. But anyway, I think I'll stop there.
I'm not sure I'm the best person to give career advice because I have a very unusual career path. I kind of quit at the peak of my career after I got my doctorate. And the Lord called me to be a stay-at-home mom for the next 7 years with indefinite plans to for prospects. To that matter. So you know, just think about that. I would say it's really important, I want to resonate what Dwight mentioned, to seek the Lord's calling on our lives. I think that is something that the Lord has taken me through different seasons of my life. Whether I was staying at home, I was told that it's a new term called work without pay. Whether, you know, you are working for pay, I think that's the calling that gave me the spark, even when days were really hard. Even when I was in my job right now, there are days that, even in the dream job, I imagine there will be really hard days and really great days. But what sustains is truly the calling. And of course, advancing God's kingdom in my sphere of influence, right? So I think the first thing, if you haven't found out your calling, I would pray really hard and spend time with the Lord, because I think that is the discernment that would really carry you through. It is not going to be the accolades. It is not going to be the publications. So, you know, all those fade away. At the end of the day, it's going to be your calling. So take some time if you haven't found that yet. And I would tell my students, synergy is when your passion and your talents or your giftings collide. So that helps. You can find that synergy. It's not just something you're good at or great at, but something you love doing day in and day out for a very long time. And that's going to take a little bit of time. Some, I envy some of my friends, they would just, you know, from even before college, say, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer. I was never like that. And maybe that's why God kind of called me in my somewhat unusual path. And I found contentment and fulfillment in that, even when I was not producing anything. So that's one. Two, I really think as a Christian who also is a learner of science, allows me to understand deeper the things of humanity, of the world. Seeing things just in one way, especially the emerging complex issues that we talked about this morning, last night, there's no one single dimension. It's not linear. You can't just understand and explain things with just science without a moral compass. There's just no sense of it. You're not rooted in something, and you're just going to float, you know, in the ocean, right? So I think this is the second thing, really be deeply anchored in our faith so that you can embody or integrate your faith. I think there was one more thing. Be excellent. I think that's one advice, whether what season in your life. Be as good as you can be in what you do. Whatever the Lord calls you, small or big, be obedient, be excellent. I think let people see your work and give glory to God rather than the other way around, right? And that's your opportunity to share the gospel, to share the light, to bear hope. Mm.
Thank you so much. So my last question was going to be for Matthew and Matt and Veronica about what helps you thrive in the early periods of your career, especially in transition. But because we do have the time issue, having gotten needed time to walk over here after the reception and then needing to get to lunch on time, I think what we'll do is take some audience Q&A now and then break up into small groups for a little while and then head over for lunch with Donna Strickland. So any questions for the panel? Yes, please.
Can y'all tell me about a story when you got stuck in your research and like how you navigated that?
Excellent question for the tape. Can you tell a story about a time when you got stuck in your research and how you navigated that? Probably most of us have some answer for this, so anyone especially excited to start?
Veronica. So in my PhD, like, it has taken me so long to finish this one chapter of my PhD. And like, it went through review, and then I spent a whole year redoing the base data. Like, everything else is done, a lot of code that at least saves time when I'm redoing something. And it wasn't even that it was wrong per se, but that there was a bias. And I was like, okay, like, God is calling me for excellence, and I want to do this for His glory. And I, you know, I don't want to just pass. And I just had to, like, really, like, oof. But the thing is, when we're rejected from a paper, from a journal, or when we're given a critique, like, in many ways, it also affects the heart, right? It hurts our pride, like, we're proud of our work, and... like, I think that most of what I was dealing with wasn't the time I had to put into the work, but all of the feelings and these kind of like these voices in my head just telling me that it wasn't good enough, wasn't going to be good enough, we'll never finish, the temptations to, you know, that I was wrestling with to just get it over with. And so I think it really was an inner conflict more than just the work itself. And I think that that's how, you know, that was my kind of value, the shadow of death kind of thing, or like just being in the wilderness, was having to do something all over again after working really hard. But God pulled through, and it was after working on myself and those lies I was accepting for myself, and finding out through also spiritual formation that some of the ways I felt rejected were also reflections of rejection I have experienced over my lifetime, and having to learn that I was accepted, that I was able to overcome, and then the word went by so fast. So, yeah, so sometimes when we get stuck, it's not necessarily the work. It can actually be something that God wants to work on in you.
Mm-hmm. Questions. I've never told this story in a setting like this, but I came to a point in my doctoral study where my advisor called me in and he said, "I don't like what you're doing." Mm-hmm. I was actually ready for my what's called a preliminary exam. You write a paper, and it's the roadmap to finishing your thesis. "I don't like what you're doing," he said. "I've checked with somebody else, so I know it's not me. And I'm asking you to find another advisor." And so that's officially a kick in the stomach. Oddly enough, my advisor's close colleague confided in me that he thought my advisor was making a mistake. And another person on my committee agreed to become my advisor. Mm. Yeah, I had to begin to do other work that had to do more with the funding of these other people. But between the person who became my advisor and the close colleague of my former advisor, who also gave me some funding, the bottom line is when I got stuck, I just simply got rescued. And it was not, you know, Henry Blackaby, famous preacher from the last 35 years maybe, said, when you see something happen that only God can do, then you know that God was at work. And I felt so bad about myself. And I felt like a failure. And I was hearing it and saw these lies in my head. But the bottom line is other people came along, recognized a little bit of the value of what I was trying to do, and gave me another opportunity. And I have nothing to say but that it was a graceful episode. So that's the story.
Thank you so much for sharing so openly about that, Dwight. And I definitely identify, and certainly sometimes of rescue in my own PhD experience also. And God and other people were there for me. I think we'll take one more audience question, and then we'll do an exercise that helps us figure out who's in the room so we can talk by field area and do a little bit of small group discussion before we head to lunch. Go ahead.
So as a female Christian researcher, what do you think about this tension between being a good researcher career-wise versus like being prepared for the family? Because I have this question because there are some guys in my church who think it's intimidating to date with a PhD. So, yeah, this is a question for both guys and ladies here.
Yeah, just so everyone can definitely hear, I'll say it into the mic, question about how, as a female researcher, who's the question to balance career preparation and thinking about having a family, and then also the fact that some men will tell you that it's intimidating to date a woman with a PhD. I think... Veronica and Louise will hand the mic to the two of you and let you explore this question if that sounds good to you.
I'll let Louise go first.
I just go.
I was once on a women in career panel, and that question was asked too. And in fact, a young student asked, well, I was told because I have such, you know, calling in being a doctor that I should marry down because otherwise it would be very difficult. So my response to that question was, I think that's a recipe for disaster because you are first God's child, not your career, right? So I said that. So I think we need to first recognize our identity in Christ and in Christ alone, that you are being complete with someone else for God's kingdom, for God's glory. So I think that is something that is very individual, and I think I can't say this is the formula that worked for me. I know I said earlier, I stayed at home. I'm not encouraging all female scientists, students to stay at home for, you know, 7+ years of journey. That's not what I'm trying to say. I think everyone's journey is different. That's why you really have to discern and seek the Lord's will over this area of your life. But it is a very, very important area of your life. I would say finding meeting that person God has for you, I would say for me, actually is more important than my career, choosing what field I'm going to be in a sense. So I want to encourage you to really spend time to seek the Lord's will and really surrender. I surrender, you know, my desires and my ambitions and all that, and ask Him to sanctify that, to make it holy over and over again, right? So I think it is a very complicated question, but I think in the right direction by asking and not succumbing to, you know, the norm, because I think it is very dangerous, very risky to succumb to the norm.
So just a shameless plug. I'm also vice president of Christian Women in Science, and we have information on this beautiful paperwork. So if you want to check it out, too. But aside from advertising, I will also say that when I first tried to read the whole Bible in a year,
I have this Bible where I have a post-it note. And I think it's in Genesis 3, but at least in the New Living Translation, when Adam sees Eve, like, his reaction was, "At last." And that meant a lot to me. And as a young woman who read the Bible like 10 years ago, I was like, that's what I want. And it's taken me so long to have that type of a moment of an Adam doing that. He said it's like flesh of my flesh, you know, it's like that peace that's always been missing. And Adam was a person who walked with God every day. And he was a person who got to work in the creation, name the animals. He was the world's very first taxonomist.
Yeah.
And like, but it was in seeing the person who God has ordained for his life that completed him. And so, like, so I think, like, that's something that I always held on to and always felt missing when I, like, was a person who had dated and things like that. And I had things in my head that I thought also, you know, well, I'm identified in Christ, and so all the other things that I am don't matter. And I would encourage you to not feel that you have to do that either, but actually everything you are is an expression of how God made you, and that full expression should be what makes your Adam look at you and say, "At last." And whether it's the same vocation, a different vocation, it doesn't matter. It's just that whoever it is somebody who's going to honor you. And if someone is intimidated by you, that's very worldly. And it's not like we should fear God, not man, not woman. And so I think that, like, as a woman, I would encourage you to just keep seeing how God see yourself as the way God sees you, and fully acknowledge yourself as this full expression, and believe in faith that there is going to be someone, and it's worth it. I mean, totally worth it.
Well, thank you so much. We'll keep having some great conversations throughout the weekend, but right now we're going to hopefully improve the odds of knowing who you can have great conversations with by doing a sort of visual exercise where we move to different parts of the room by rough field area, and then you'll be in the right spot for field area small groups, and I'll give you a few questions to discuss. Sometimes it's just nice to see visually, oh, I'm in chemistry, but I want to ask some physicists some questions later. So I'm going to meet the chemist now and then catch that other person later. So I'm going to name a few field areas and spaces of the room to meet in. And I apologize that this is auditorium style and the setup's not perfect for small groups, but I tried to get them to give me a more small group room, and they were like, "We have more auditoriums." So, but I know you can handle it. So we'll divide up by field area, and if we try out to have like 20 physicists, then we'll sort into smaller subfields of physics, and if there are just like two or four, maybe we'll merge with an adjacent field or something. So, and if I miss your field, I'll try and remember to say, "Did I miss anybody?" But if I miss your field, don't be shy about being like, "You missed my specialty." We'll add it in. So I am going to ask folks in physics to kind of cluster in that corner of the room. And Margarita, may I ask you to be sort of there, weighing down the other folks in physics? Bob is an amazing scholar. He is an award-winning physicist who is an emeritus professor from Princeton. He does an incredible amount to support students and Christian groups and other physicists, and I think you'll enjoy connecting with him. So if you're in physics, feel free to move towards that corner of the room. If you're in more of a biology or life sciences area, meet down here at this corner. If you're in chemistry, meet over here in this corner. And if you're in the social sciences, we're trying to get in that corner of the room, or we want social scientists, we wish we had more of them. If it turns out to just be one of you, we'll merge you into another group. And then let's meet for those in math or a math-heavy field who would like to talk to mathematicians. If you were to cluster right down here and meet Natalie Walton, who is a math professor, I think that will be great. Field areas I may have missed. Anybody in a field that isn't loosely covered by that? And are there any other ecologists besides Veronica right now?
I mean, I can hang out with the life sciences.
Okay, all right. Ecologists also hang out with biologists. All right, so let's